Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Darty here, as always, with Mr. Craig Dennis Carter. It is day four of our Radio Row World Tour, and we have an amazing show for you today. Robert Mays from The Athletic will be joining us right off the top before we welcome in PointsBet's head trader, Jay Croucher, and then the Denver Broncos' Noah Fant. But first, we have Mr. Mays, host of The Athletic's football show, and dare I say, now a writer for The New York Times, Robert?
I guess that's sort of true. It's good to know that Noah Fant will be the second best athlete on this show though, after the 6:040 that I posted yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we're all in line, that means. Yeah. We were 5'9". Pat was a little slow on the stopwatch, but that's neither here nor there.
I ran one barefoot, so I feel like 6'0 is... Yeah,
that's pretty good.
That's different. Yeah. You adjust that for the barefoot, and it's like 5'5".
I'd say that's 4'8". 4'8 if I ran with shoes on. That's what we're going to go with.
At the minimum, that might be 4'6", 4'7". Yeah, we did dress shoes. We're all very prepared to run the 40-yard dash. Yep.
My feet are still recovering, actually. I have some issues after running.
Physically, I'm fine. Emotionally, not so much.
Yes, exactly. We are emotionally shattered. Yeah.
It was tough to see that number. Yeah, I have to be honest.
The number was just screaming, you are 35 years old.
That's right. Exactly what it is. It's a calculation of how washed you are. Yeah. You feel it all the time, but it's a little bit more nebulous. Now it's concrete.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really hard to stare that mortality in that cold, calculated way in the face.
Yes, you do have proof. The stopwatch does not lie, even though it might have lied to Denny.
It definitely lied. Oh, now I'll click it.
But yeah, Robert is a dual-threat athlete, is a New York Times athletic writer and a 40-yard dash runner. But Robert, my first question is, like me, you are a Mizzou alum.
Yes.
Unlike me, you are also a Bears fan. How do you do that? How do you tolerate all that pain? How do you... I can't even think of two more painful football entities.
It's sort of a Bane situation. You merely adopted the dark. I was born in it. When I watch teams that struggle with quarterback quality or bad offense and they're new to it or it's something that they've come to later in life, this is just how I was raised. I'm 34 years old. My team has never had a top 10 quarterback.
No,
has never had a truly above average quarterback in my entire life. And they are the worst offense by a lot of numbers of the past 20 years, since 2000. It is a constant struggle. It's a constant question. They just hired another defensive-minded head coach so we could continue having it be a constant struggle. I'm just used to it by now. I'm almost so prepared for it that even if they had that one year in like 2013 when they had a good offense with Alshon Jeffery,
the NFC Championship,
with that Mark Trestman year. That kind of felt like it was all working, it felt so strange that I wrote about it for Grantland.
Really?
Like, this feels so strange that the Bears offense has a better outlook than their defense for the first time ever, but then the defense was so bad that all those guys ended up getting fired.
I love that offense. Matt Forte catching passes out of the backfield. Martellus Bennett. Who else was on the other side of Brandon Marshall? Anyway, it was a solid offense.
Yeah, it was. This fleeting moment, though. So it's very, very far away now.
You just described the Bears, but how would you even describe what's wrong with Mizzou? Like, Mizzou just, like, I just am conditioned to know, even if something is very minor positive news, just conditioned to know that within 2 months, that'll just be somehow the exact opposite. I don't even know how to describe what it's like being a Mizzou football
player. What's happening right now is just a confirmation to me that Gary Pinkel was unbelievably good at his job. And what they had going for them, I mean, you know this. When we were there, they had this pipeline of just three-star recruits from Texas. All the guys that Texas and Oklahoma didn't want, Mizzou would scoop them up, and they had a fantastic coaching staff. Speaking of Matt Eberflus,
yes,
he was
seriously
the defensive coordinator on those teams. I mean, now he's an NFL head coach. They had really, really good coaches on that staff, and their ability to develop the Sean Weatherspoons of the world and the William Moores of the world into, I mean, they pumped out NFL draft picks. I mean, at one point over like a 5-year stretch, the only team that had produced more first round picks in the was Alabama.
Yes.
I mean, and to do that with the recruiting classes they were having, it was really, really hard to replicate. But moving to the SEC, you change how the recruiting grounds that you're looking for. You remove Gary Pinkel from the situation, and they're Mizzou again. They're what, yes, Mizzou was for the past 40 years.
Yes, and like literally, like you said, it was almost exclusively 3-star recruits from Texas.
Yeah.
They would just coach them up. It was, yeah, very easy formula to replicate. Denny, by the way, has never watched a college football
game. I have
game,
never
so
done
no
it.
Idea what we're talking about.
Have you guys considered not watching?
I don't watch Mizzou games much anymore.
I kind of
he
got
watches
that
every
sense
one
that you didn't. I do.
I have a fiance. And the reason I have a fiance is that I don't watch college football on Saturdays. So yeah, I'd like to continue that,
right,
because Sundays are off the table for 22 weeks a year. And in order to maintain the relationship that we have, I have to give her one weekend day.
Well, I wish I could tell you you're missing out on something, but you're not.
I really don't think I am.
Very good.
I think I'm a happier, more well-adjusted person because I don't watch it.
You're practicing self-care.
You have the choice, you know. Like,
well, Denny,
when you went to Mizzou, you didn't sign a contract saying I will put myself through.
But I'm actually, you know, I'm born and raised from Missouri. My dad, my grandparents, like, this is like, you know, kind of like cradle to the grave.
Right.
Like, I just don't, like, the punishment is this part of my life, like, ethos at this point.
What if I told you you being born in Missouri was a cosmic coincidence?
Nothing
more.
There's nothing I can do about it. But anyways, yeah. So, Robert, unlike Denny and I, you are actually required to talk and write about real football. We are only fantasy football analysts, but just getting into Super Bowl
56. I care
56.
More about fantasy football than real football. It's important to know.
That's good. That's good.
It's good to admit.
But just heading into Super Bowl 56, I'll just start off with kind of like a cliche, simple question, but what do you think is the single most critical matchup of this game? And like, it could be something as like a one-on-one matchup, or it could be like the Bengals O-line versus the Rams D-line. What do you think is the single most critical matchup of Super Bowl 56?
So I think that the Bengals O-line against the Rams D-line is, we know that that's a mismatch. We know that the Rams are probably going to have an advantage there. So I'm actually going the other side of the ball with the two fronts, because a huge part of why the Rams offense has been successful this year is that they've held up really well in pass protection. That offensive line as a pass protecting group has been excellent. They haven't run the ball as well as they want to or have in years past, but they've done a fantastic job of keeping Matthew Stafford upright. And if you think just about why the Rams passing game is so hard to defend, if you look to that three receiver side and you have those concepts with Cooper Kupp and Van Jefferson and Tyler Higbee often, and then you have Odell Beckham now isolated to the backside, they've really transitioned to that version of their offense since Beckham got there. They're hitting Beckham on the backside of those concepts late in downs. That is only possible because of Matthew Stafford's arm, the way he can get kind of those throws off. He operates well in traffic, but you can only hit those when you have time to do it. So if the Bengals can do a better job of collapsing the pocket, using some games in the same way that we saw the Titans do, you can't blitz the Rams. They absolutely flame teams that blitz them. I mean, Matthew Stafford, I believe, had more EPA total against the blitz in the 2021 season than any quarterback in a single season since 2016.
Really?
And that's how good they were. So in order to pressure them, you need to rush with four, but can you do it in interesting ways? So I want to see how many twists do we see? How many simulated pressures do we see? And can if the Rams offensive line holds up in this game, I think that they win, and I think they win by a lot.
I think that's been the general theme
as
the week has.
We've been talking about new thoughts every day, and the thought that keeps coming back to me about this game is that the Rams could very easily win this in a decided fashion. You know, if Stafford doesn't make the mistakes, which you know, against a Bengals defense that drops a lot of guys in coverage, and he's not been good in those situations at all. He's been much better under pressure somehow. It could collapse in that way if Stafford makes those mistakes. But if he can avoid those mistakes, I just don't see an avenue toward the Bengals winning here.
Well, like you said, just the fact that you literally cannot blitz. And we talk about this, it's almost like Matthew Stafford, like, He's like a really good like split second thinker. Yeah. It's like with the blitz is in his face, he just like kind of like instinctually knows what to do with the ball.
He's an instinctual player. He's a gut player. Yeah.
And the arm angle stuff is real in those moments,
it is.
Right? When you have to get the ball out quickly, and it's weird. We're going to talk about this on our preview here in a second on our show. What is the version of the drop eight coverage that the Bengals did last week? What does this week's version look like? This game's version? Mm-hmm. Because they're not going to do the same thing.
No.
And that's been the amazing part about this Bengals defense is that it's a microwave to defense. It's all built through free agency. You have half of those guys that came on this year. Your Chidobe Awuzie's, Mike Hilton's. Yeah. And somehow they've been able to have enough cohesion and communication and smarts between them that they can run a new defense every single week. They can do all of this stuff that they change their stripes, pun not intended, as often as they want to. And that's what's so fascinating to me is now that you have 2 weeks, what does that change look like, one that's tailored specifically to what the Rams do well? I don't know the answer to that because I'm not an NFL coach.
Yeah, and first off, the way they built the defense was so unusual. Because, Roto will be blurb everything, and like they were in free agency like every day. I was like, wow, they're signing another guy to like a real money deal. Like they're trying to do like the classic like actually building through free agency, which doesn't always work necessarily. And
it's necessary when you can't draft anyone.
Yes,
when you can't draft anyone for years,
and when you had almost no talent on defense, it's weird because they don't have like elite personnel. They're not like a truly elite defense, but another thing we've been commenting about this week is they're like a big play defense. They seem to like know how to scheme to create, not that you can like scheme to create game changing plays, but it's kind of like you said, the new looks, the new wrinkles they throw out kind of create game changing plays. And with 2 weeks, yeah, to do that, to plan and prepare for that, that is going to be one of the biggest factors in the game.
Robert, we wanted to ask you about the Rams' approach since about week 15, late in the season. They seem to have shifted to a more, kind of conservative, run-heavy approach, which has lasted now about 2 months. They have a 49% pass rate while leading since week 15, which is a huge drop from their early season numbers when that number was in the upper 50s and sometimes in the low 60s. What do you make of that change in approach by Sean McVay?
I think it's a way to kind of slow down their heartbeat a little bit. You think about just how frantic that offense looked in that middle part of the season, right, when there were a lot of mistakes. There were a lot of decisions that Matthew Stafford was making. It's like, what is going on? And the move to Sony Michel kind of in that stretch of the year, I mean, you guys know this. I mean, he won fantasy leagues for people based on what he was doing in that final back half of the year.
Yeah, we weren't counting on 20 Sony Michel carries.
What they did it because it was a foundation. It was a way to say, we're going to slow the game down. We're going to, again, just kind of slow down the heartbeat of the offense a little bit and rely on this. It's not explosive because Sony Michel isn't explosive. And the numbers don't necessarily warrant the amount of times they're running the ball. The efficiency isn't where you'd want it to be. But I think they wanted something that they could kind of steadily rely on and kind of keep the train on the tracks offensively. I don't think it's necessarily the way they want to play, but I think it was a stabilizing factor and a stabilizing force for them in those moments.
There was like this mid-season, kind of like, it was kind of when Matthew Stafford like started showing up in the injury report. It was never anything serious. I mean, I'm sure it was serious.
The back.
Actually. Yeah. Always with the back for him the past few years. And like, yeah, that 2 or 3 week span where he like threw a bunch of interceptions and like some not good interceptions.
I think it spooked McVay.
It did a little bit, but like you said, maybe just they have successfully stable. And like you said, it's probably not like his first choice, but it has been working. And do you think, is this going to be like a ball control game? Because they know both teams, that's kind of what they want to do in theory, or are we going to get a high octane offensive Super Bowl?
I could see both teams playing pretty conservative on defense. You know, the Rams, if you look at the numbers with Joe Burrow against single high shells and against two high coverages, he's a lot better when you're putting one safety in the middle of the field because he's been willing to take those shots. He's been willing to take advantage of those one-on-one matchups. So if the Rams go to a more quarters-based approach and they try to put a roof over them the entire game, I think you're going to see small bites. Small chunks being bitten off by the Bengals, and that inherently makes it a ball control game. On the other side, what do the Bengals do? I think that's ultimately going to be the biggest question about how they influence the Rams offense. Are they going to do some more of that drop eight stuff? Are they going to play with really, really light boxes and dare the Rams to run the ball? There's a version of this game where I think we don't see a ton of big plays because the defenses are tailored entirely to slow those things down because
that's
you're
what
playing
we're afraid
into
of.
The other team's hands. And I think we might see that. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it was a 24-13 type game. That wouldn't shock me.
I know. Like, and none of us are like, gambling first type people, but I have been thinking this week, you know, the over under has been usually around 48.5. I mean, like, I have a hard time.
The under's looking good.
That happening.
The under seems good, and even the first quarter under, the first half under, those look even better when you consider it could be a really slow start in a hostile environment for the Bengals. And the Bengals.
Hold on. I mean, let's be real. I don't know. It's not even a hostile environment when it's not.
I think it might be a hostile environment for the Rams.
Yeah.
Wait a second. The Cincinnati fans, as good as they are, they're not traveling like Steelers.
They're not
fans
traveling, but you know, these aren't the real fans getting the tickets here, Denny. I mean, this is true. You know, it's people like you, you know, spending $20,000 on a ticket.
And, yeah. You know me.
Yeah, drinking coffee. You're not going to have a beer at the Super Bowl.
But the Bengals have really struggled in the first quarter of games. Anyway, that's I just want to throw that out there.
Well, so, Robert, you talked about maybe the Bengals trying to dare the Rams to run. The Rams have been playing, like, so many light boxes. Do you feel like that's going to be, like, the early game plan for this, essentially dare the Bengals to run? Because we know, like, when the Bengals think they can run, they want to try to run. It seems that's just, like, what they love to do when they can. But do you think, is there any way the Bengals can actually win Super Bowl 56? Like, if they're going out there with this conservative offensive, do you really think that's a game they can win? Are they the team, is it fair to say they're the team more than the Rams that they're going to need to, like, push the pace, need a higher octane game?
I think in terms of the running game and the Rams kind of daring you to run the ball, that's what they want you to do.
Yes.
When they play that way, that's what they want you to do. They play with the lightest boxes in the league.
Yes.
They play with the most two high shells in the league. And they're also a top five efficiency run defense.
Yes.
It's not as though.
And
it's
have
like,
been just
oh,
shutting down
to make
teams
it, yeah,
lately.
And obviously last week is a different situation, right? Playing all those six-man tilted fronts. They're daring Jimmy to beat them. They're not going to do that now.
No.
That's not the way they're going to play
Joe Burrow
this week.
Will beat them.
But they don't need to play that way. I mean, they have such a set of mismatches along the offensive line. It's not like there's one weak point along the Bengals' offensive line where you say, oh, Aaron Donald has a real advantage over this right guard. Every single one of those matchups, in my opinion, is a win for the Rams. Mm-hmm. Leonard Floyd against the right tackle is a win. Von Miller against the left tackle, who is arguably their best offensive lineman, is a win. A'shaun Robinson, the way he's playing against Quentin Spain, is a win. Greg Gaines against Trey Hopkins is a win. So even if you look at it and you say, oh, they're in a six-man box, the 5-1 front, which they do all the time on early downs, we can run into that. That's exactly what Raheem Morris wants you to think. When they were kind of building this off or defensive philosophy last year, and Brandon Staley was doing all these extreme things, kind of pushing the envelope in that way, he's trying to play into your nature.
Yes.
Right? He's trying to say, all right, I'm showing you something that there should be alarm bells in your mind, you saying, this is an advantage for me. This is
trap.
An advantage for me. Let's run the ball. It's exactly what they want. They would so much rather have you try to bite off little 5-yard chunks over and over and over again then push the ball down the field. Because if you don't create explosive plays in the NFL, you're not going to win. It all plays into each other.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I feel what you just said, I feel like Zach Taylor has no chance of not buying into that. like he's going to fall for it. I just feel like that's a guarantee at this point.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like, even if they do somehow like take advantage, like, I just don't feel like 120-yard Joe Mixon games, like, even that big of a deal.
But, like, Zach Taylor's going to be good with, like, 4- and 5-yard Mixon runs. Oh, this is – here we go. This is what we're doing.
I don't know if you're getting 4 and 5 yards, though. If they run the ball the way they did against the Chiefs, and you're sitting there looking at 2nd and 7 all game, it's over.
Right.
It's over.
Right.
Against this team, it's over. The Chiefs' pass rush is pretty good. You know, Melvin Ingram was a nice story because
yes, he
came in midseason and played pretty well. There's no pretty well with the Rams defensive line. They ruined the Bucs offensive line in that game. Even with Wirfs hurt, the guys that weren't hurt, they were destroying them over the course of that game. Von Miller ate Donovan Smith's lunch for 4 straight quarters. That defensive line against this Bengals offensive line in 3rd and long situations, the game's over before it starts. You cannot put yourself in that we need Joe Burrow miracles on 3rd down sort of mindset again this game.
Right.
And which has somehow worked like several times in the playoffs, but yeah, not a sustainable formula. By the way, Denny Robert, he named almost every offensive line, defensive line matchup. We could do that, right?
Yeah, well, I think we were talking about that the other day about A'shaun Robinson, who is a guy who plays on defense.
But
I don't know Adeniji's first name. That's the one I don't know. Isaiah Prince is the right tackle. I could do them all.
Yeah, I bet you could. So is it safe to say, the cliche question, do you think the Rams are going to win Super Bowl 56?
I do. I think that they're going to win. You know, what Joe Burrow has done is remarkable. And I wouldn't rule out a Bengals win simply because of how well their defense has played.
They're a team of destiny, Rob. That's a real thing.
They've created their own destiny on defense. And I just am so impressed with their defense. It's so funny because if you look at over the course of the season, coming into the year, we flamed the Bengals in our preseason preview. We looked at them and just like, this team, you cannot win this way. You cannot win with this free agent built defense, because we looked at their defense and said, where are the stars?
Yeah.
Where are the difference makers? And I believe if you look at the spending allocation, I think they have the third most expensive defense in the NFL this year.
That's crazy.
And when we were looking at that in August, think how on who? How can you get there without having any stars on that side of the ball? But I think I underrated, I know I did, not having any weak points. You know, they don't have any A-plus defensive players, but they got a lot of Bs, and they have no D-minuses. And I think you see that. You know, Eli Apple and the linebackers and coverage is really the only thing you have to worry about, and they've hid those things. And their ability to kind of throw these curveball game plans at on offenses that are specifically tailored to stop those offenses, that's brought them to this point. There's always a chance they hit another one flush the same way they did in the second half against the Chiefs. But I just think there's so many uphill battles they have to fight in this game that it's a whole order to make that happen.
I just realized if the Bengals do win, the Eli Apple tweets, we're going to be talking about them.
Quote, they're going to dominate the timeline. Yeah, the Bengals have been running pure. I think that that's kind of the main message here going to the Super Bowl. If they can keep doing that, I guess they have a decent shot. If they can't run pure in this game, I think the Rams win by a lot.
It's funny that you say that, but he got sacked nine times against the Titans.
More than
I guess
a normal
defense. I guess defense the Bengals defense.
The defense has been, yes. But it's so funny because you look at they played six halves in the playoffs, right? They played two of them against a Raiders team that I think we can all admit is not very good.
Not the great.
They played two halves against the Titans team where they allowed 9 sacks and got 3 Ryan Tannehill picks against an offense that never found itself in the back half of the season. Never did. And then they played two halves against the Chiefs. In one, they almost gave up 28 points. Mm-hmm. And in the second one, again, they hit him flush with like a left cross, and that was it, and that was enough. So it just... threading the needle that they've threaded is very impressive. I have a hard time seeing them do it again.
Yeah.
We have one more question for you before we let you go. We're just kind of we're going back through.
Before we let you go,
Super Bowl question.
I thought of something you wrote in the summer about Elijah Moore, the rookie this year.
You've been
the
talking
Jets.
About Elijah Moore all week, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure this is a hot topic.
It's definitely not what I expected.
People are stopping us out there. It's like, can you please get someone to talk about Elijah Moore?
We're looking for Elijah Moore in the media row here. You wrote in July that Elijah Moore, quote, isn't just going to be a slot option for the Jets. He's going to have the multifaceted role of a top shelf receiver. Now, we didn't see a ton of that in fantasy-wise this year, but from week 8 to week 13, when he was healthy and he emerged as the clear number one option in New York, he was fantasy's fourth highest scoring wide receiver. He was targeted on 30% of his pass routes over that stretch. That was the fifth highest in the league among receivers. So he really did command those targets when he was healthy. What jumped out to you in watching Elijah Moore to, you know, make you write that?
He didn't move like a slot receiver. You know, he had vertical speed, his ability to kind of push the ball down the field in that area. It almost reminded me, and this was a pre-draft comp a lot of people used, of what Brandon Cooks looks like on an NFL field, where his stature would lead you to believe that he's one type of player, when in actuality, he's a different type of player. And even the way they were lining him up, I mean, the routes that they had him on, Zach Wilson looked incredible that day I was there at training camp, which it's always the risk you run when you get to camp for one day.
Sure.
You can be totally misled. And the ways they were using Elijah Moore that day, I mean, deep play action routes. It had nothing to do with we're going to use you in a slot route or a slot role and that's all you're going to be. It seemed much more varied than that, and that's just how I came away thinking about it.
Yeah, and that's what we saw. I appreciate you writing that, because it really turned me on to Elijah Moore as like a late round pick who had a lot of upside. I loved what you wrote.
Yeah,
there.
The point of this question was basically just to thank you for telling us.
I really appreciate that. It was my one day as a beat writer, because our Jets beat writer was at a wedding.
You did a great job.
I had to cover the Jets for a day, and I'm glad I got one nugget in my one day as a beat writer.
Well, when you have like one day at Steelers camp next summer or something, we're going to be parsing it very closely.
I may have to hit Steelers camp next year, because I did not this year. So I try to diversify each individual season.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for joining us. You've got to go do your own Preview Now show. The Athletic Football Podcast is just one of the best out there.
Thanks, man. I appreciate
that. Awesome stuff. And thank you so much for joining us today. It's awesome. Just a really good, real game breakdown and preview.
Thank you for being
good. I got to workshop
football.
Some of my takes before I get to
there. You go. Exactly.
Yeah,
maybe go say like the exact opposite on your show. You know, we've been doing that this week, kind of. But, you know, seriously, thank you so much for joining us. And, we'll cross paths again soon.
It's my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
See you, dude.
All right.
We now welcome in PointsBet's head trader, Jay Croucher, who's, it's hard. I've gone to this wrong side of the seat several times. And, Jay, we've been talking about, you've got this game like down cold from a betting perspective, which is really good for Denny and I, because we just don't still somehow.
Can you tell us what to do?
Yeah, and there's this, Jay, tell me how to win Super Bowl squares. That's like a real thing. That's like something you can strategize for.
That's a high percentage game.
Yeah, you know? very high percentage game.
That's good. Everybody who knows a lot plays plays the squares.
So basically, we are not gambling sharps. You are very smart about gambling. Let's just begin. So Denny and I are the public. Let's say that. Where do you see the public leaning for this game right now? Where are like the sharps, the smart money leaning for this game right now?
Well, I think the public is definitely leaning to the Rams just overall with everything. I think that now kind of a bit of the mistake of Joe Burrow that was like right after the Chiefs win is now people are starting to look at that Bengals team as the team that went 10-7, that lost to the Bears, that lost to the Jets, and they're not this dominant team. Whereas the Rams, they have more star power. They're playing at home. They're just a bit more of a known commodity. And I think people are just more comfortable betting with the Rams.
It's more like the people. We've had 2 weeks now to investigate the Bengals. Well, maybe they're not a team of destiny.
Right.
They literally lost the New York Jets.
But if the overarching feeling is that the Rams are going to win, I feel like I'm buying into a narrative that's maybe too popular. Are any of the sharps leaning towards Cincinnati, or is?
Because it does seem like everyone we've talked to this week, no one's saying like, oh, I like the Bengals.
Right.
No one's even saying they like the Bengals to cover. You know, let alone win outright, which does feel dangerous.
Yeah, I think since, I got into L.A. on Sunday night, I don't think I've heard a single person make the case for the Bengals. Everyone's just saying, Rams 35-20 or whatever and a blowout. But I think that, to me, this whole Super Bowl is just about Matthew Stafford. Because, what I've said before is that Matthew Stafford, every game he plays, he holds a grenade. And he's kept his thumb on the grenade throughout the playoffs, except he kind of let it go when he threw that pass to Tart down the middle.
Mm.
It's just Tart didn't catch it. And so the thing is that, we think that these lines that we price are really solid and there's a lot of information that goes into them. And that's why the Rams are -4. But one interception, on average, that just shifts the spread 5 points. And one interception is worth 5 points. And so you're just one split second of Matthew Stafford insanity from the Bengals immediately flipping favorite. So that's how narrow these margins are in a one-off sample size.
That's a great tidbit, and
it's insane.
And if we get a true Stafford game, and maybe that becomes 2 or 3 picks, that puts the Bengals right in position.
Well, yeah, we were just talking with Robert Mays too from the Athletic, who's talking. The Bengals make big plays on defense. They're going to have like some exotic looks, some crazy looks, and they could bait Matthew Stafford. 5 point. I feel like you never hear anything that's that big of a swing. Usually, I'm always shocked by how small a swing is. Like, oh, it's only 1.9 points actually.
It's a big deal, and Stafford, he has a tendency as well to throw picks that go for 6 the other way, and I think that's just kind of randomness and chance.
It is randomness, but they've been a lot of them lately. He's had several pick sixes.
I feel like the pick sixes he throws are a lot to the outside where it is a situation where if the cornerback catches it, it's over. Like no one is catching him.
He doesn't throw like 80-yard pick sixes. It's like when he's inside his own 20 a lot.
Yes, it is.
To the outside.
We wanted to ask you about prop bets because as fantasy guys, that kind of is – I feel more comfortable looking at prop bets because of the fantasy angle and the connection there. Can you tell us about a couple of the most popular prop bets in this game?
Yeah, so the big ones are all related to Cooper Kupp, where I think he is the story of the skill position players. He is the guy who was really the first wide receiver borderline MVP candidate we've had since I can't even remember when.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe Calvin Johnson.
Maybe, Michael Thomas got a little bit of buzz in his amazing season in 2019, but it wasn't to the level of Kupp. And so, Kupp is a guy who, he breaks all the models. It's just all season I was waiting for someone to figure something out.
Or we say I would just simply cover Cooper Kupp, and then they never did.
Just do that.
It's apparently not possible.
I don't really understand why. Like, I remember the Ravens game against Green Bay where they, bracketed Devontae Adams and they were double and triple teaming him every play. Like, I don't really understand why no one ever did that to Kupp, but he just seems to be someone who is just so eerily consistent and undeniable, and people are just, they're just trusting that he's going to get more than 105 yards and that he is going to get in the end zone, where our most popular prop bet is just Cooper Kupp to score a touchdown, which is -150, and people just think that's free money. There are almost as many bets on that as there are on the spread.
Yeah.
Which you know, 10 years ago would have been unheard of, but now player props are so popular to bet on, and people are just putting Cooper Kupp into everything. And this Cincinnati defense obviously isn't that intimidating. The secondary isn't that imposing. So there's just a lot of love for Cooper Kupp everything over.
Well, Cooper Kupp gets open so easily, and Sean McVay, you know, for years throughout the Jared Goff years, like, there'd be so many times where they would just scheme someone completely wide open for Jared Goff, and he can still very much do that with Matthew Stafford. And like, just feel like at some point in the game, you just have Cooper Kupp like running free on Apple or something.
I will say, if when you try to, you know, come up with a narrative in your head of how Cooper Kupp won't exceed 105 yards, 106 yards, whatever it is, the only one I can come up with is that the Rams get out to a big lead on the strength of their special teams and their defense, and they run the ball a ton, and Stafford only throws it maybe like 20, 22 times. In that scenario, I can see Kupp not, you know, not getting over 100. But other than that, I mean, it seems like a slam dunk, honestly. I don't know.
That scenario kind of developed in the divisional round.
Yeah.
And then when it got close, then he just blew by it.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and it happened against Arizona in the wild card.
That's right. That's right.
I think that's the pathway for it to happen. But even in, you know, earlier blowout games that the Rams have had when they destroyed Jacksonville in the middle to later part of the season, Kupp is still going well over. So I think that just Stafford's connection with him, it is hard to see how Cooper Kupp has a bad game, because, you know, I think that to maybe fans who haven't followed the league as closely and is tuning in for the Super Bowl, they still might have the perception that Cooper Kupp is a slot receiver.
Yeah.
Cooper Kupp's like one of the best deep threats in the game as well.
Right.
Like, he just does
just
everything.
Just running right by people.
Yeah. And I think still more than 50% of his snaps come in the slot, but he can just be lined up everywhere, and he just seems impossible to scheme out of the game.
It's why Cooper Kupp's peripheral numbers have been off the charts all year. We've been expecting, you know, my colleague Pat Corain at NBC Sports Edge and I have talked about how, like, these numbers are impossible to maintain. You know, this is back week six, week eight, but he just maintained them because he's not only their most effective deep threat by far, he's an extension of the running game. So he gobbles up those intermediate targets. He gets the long ones. It's really incredible.
It's because they have breakfast together.
They're breakfast buddies, Stafford and Kupp. And if we had known that in the preseason, I think that fantasy drafts would have gone differently.
Danny and I have been becoming closer this week having breakfast together. We haven't really succeeded having an actual breakfast.
No, we haven't had breakfast.
We've been sitting with each other near what would be considered breakfast time, and one of us has been consuming a product.
Yeah,
and
you've been scarfing bread while I've been drinking water.
So everyone's all over Cooper. What's a non-Cooper Kupp prop getting a lot? Actually, I just feel like, we are talking about Cooper Kupp a lot this week. Understandably so, because he's the most important non-quarterback in the game. But what's a non-Cooper Kupp prop getting a lot of action?
There has been a lot of Kupp chat this week. Yeah. I think, you know, our next most popular player bet on, as you might expect, is Odell Beckham, because I guess he's the next most famous player.
And he's coming off his first 100-yard game as a Ram.
Yes. And I think that people are, there's probably a little bit of recency bias behind that with how good he looked against the Niners. And so a lot of people are betting on him to go over 60.5 yards. That's a really popular bet. And I think that, you know, Odell is a really difficult player to price just because we have such little sample size of what he is in this environment on this team. And so it is really difficult. I think that probably the most important thing, though, if you are optimistic about Odell, is that he had 11 targets against San Francisco, which was his most of the season. And it makes sense that as he spends more time in the team, in the ecosystem, that Stafford would get more comfortable passing to him. So that is the argument for Odell. The argument against Odell over 16.5 is that he doesn't really go over 16.5
very
often.
No, he hasn't done it very many times at all.
No. Yeah. So I think that will be that'll be a big decision for us, whether he goes over or under, but very popular, and people are believing in Odell.
A big kind of like under the radar storyline, I feel like, is that Daryl Henderson might actually play in this game. It's weird. They don't have to issue official injury reports on him because he's still technically on injured reserve, but they're basically saying he's going to be active. Have you seen that affecting the yardage lines for Cam Akers and Sony Michel? Or is the gambling world not really taking serious the possibility that Daryl Henderson might come in this game and see enough work?
I think we do, and I think that's affected Akers' price. Like, he's been in for rushing yards, he's been in the mid-60s, and he's getting bet lower and lower as we go. And the thing is that Akers just hasn't looked good. He's been getting a lot of volume.
He's had the power, but he just has not had... He's a guy who relies on those breakaway runs, and he just has not had a breakaway run yet.
Yeah, and he doesn't, just historically, even prior to the injury, he doesn't put up many huge yardage games. And I think that, you know, there should be potential for him to have a big game just because McVay loves running the ball. It's what he wants to do, particularly if they get a lead in the second half and, you know, they're 4-point favorites. They're minus 200 on the money line, so you'd expect that they would have a lead in the second half and that Akers would get some run, but at the same time, he just hasn't delivered at all. So it's a really difficult element to kind of, I guess, project and price just the Rams running game, what it will be, because you expect they'll get the volume, but they just haven't gotten the production.
Is there like a lower key prop, something that you've been interested in that looks like it might be like, where there might be some opportunity there, someone like Tyler Boyd or someone like Samaje Perine or even like Kendall Blanton, kind of like the forgotten players of the game? Are there any of those that you have found like very interesting this week?
I think Tyler Boyd is interesting to think about, because when you just look at, you know, talking about matchups, it's really difficult to predict how matchups are going to unfold. But when you look at the Rams, their weakness, which is well chronicled, is that, you know, the stuff to the short middle of the field where their linebackers aren't great in coverage. And I think that, you know, Tyler Boyd, whose line is 40 and a half receiving yards, he is the Bengals' most targeted receiver over the middle. So there is potential for him to go over, and you figure that, you know, Ramsey isn't going to go on Boyd. No. On Chase and Higgins.
It would be kind of a misuse of resources.
Yeah. Not sure about that one. And CJ Uzama's status will, you know, weigh heavily in that Boyd calculus. But I do love Boyd as a low key option, both in DFS and for prop bets.
Is the gambling world, are they confident? What's like the overall? I don't even know what to
say. Like, what are the gambling?
Is the gambling world, are they confident like Tyler Higbee and CJ Uzama are going to play in this game, or do they think that's more coaching smoke?
I think it's the expectation is, and not just to stick with the tight ends, but it's kind of like Gronkowski in that second Giants-Pats Super Bowl
where he wasn't,
but he still played and he was still out there and he was still doing some stuff.
Yeah.
Where we expect that, you know, they'll probably play and they'll probably be very limited and they're not going to put up big yardage totals. But so that's the kind of expectation, is you're getting 60 to 70% of those guys. But yeah, it's something that will certainly be, because we offer all these player props in play now and we're updating them in play as the game is going. And so there will be a very quick trigger in adjustments on those guys just once we just see them run on the first play and just how they look and whether they're limping.
KJ, final question. Mm. Is going to be the over or the under, and are the Bengals going to cover?
Yeah, I like the Rams and the over, which spells bad news for points bet, because we need the other two things to happen. But I think that what the Bengals have done, I just think that when you look at the full season sample, they're just not as good as the Rams. There's nothing that suggests they're as good as the Rams. They've gotten through the playoffs with 3-1 score victories, and really the defense has only really looked good for, it was one half against the Chiefs and then against the Titans. It wasn't even that great against the Raiders. So I think that, you know, the Rams are the better team. They should be able to move the ball, and so much what the Bengals did was with this rushing three, dropping eight into coverage, and it just feels like that's something that McVay should be able to figure out with 2 weeks preparation. So I think that the Rams are the better team, but at the same time, Matthew Stafford has that grenade and he could really destroy his team at any given moment. So that's why I'm not super confident in that, just because of Stafford and how high variance he is. When you're betting on a favorite, you want just rock solid consistency. You just want Tom Brady and his short passes over the middle over and over again, whereas Stafford has much more variance. So definitely the Bengals are very live.
That's just such an apt analogy.
It is. I really like it. I'm not going to stop thinking about it until Sunday.
I mean, by Friday, we're going to be claiming, Denny, you came up with this
a grenade. Stafford has a grenade. Yeah. Yep.
Well, Jay, thank you so much for educating Denny and I. It's just been great stuff all week on Bet the Edge. Great stuff for all of us. So thank you so much for dropping by. Good luck with all your propositions this weekend. And just thank you very much.
No worries. Pleasure, guys.
Our pleasure.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well.
So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It is now our great pleasure to welcome in Bronco standout Noah Fant, who is here on behalf of Outkast NFT. He's only 24 years old and has already posted three 500-yard campaigns in the NFL. Noah, you are in an offense with so much young talent. You have yourself, Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, Javonte Williams, Albert O, he went to Mizzou where I went, and I still cannot say his last name properly. I'm assuming you can, but what do you think you guys might be doing differently under new coach Nathaniel Hackett in 2022?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, what Coach Hackett's already said, is that, you know, he's going to be taking advantage of all of our strengths, right? I mean, he said that, you know, he's going to take advantage of what everybody does well, and then try to make any weaknesses a strong point for him, which is a great sign of a coach and a great sign of a offensive-minded coach. So I'm excited.
Yeah, so you're talking about you've been under a really good defensive-minded head coach in Vic Fangio, but under, like you said now, an offensive-minded head coach, Nathaniel Hackett, are you expecting kind of a more, like, up-tempo, aggressive approach, or like any early signs on what you think, just like kind of the tempo of the offense?
Yeah, I mean, from what he said, we're going to establish a run game, more outside zone based, and then we're still going to, you know, hit those passes down the field, and I think that's going to be great. And like you said, you know, obviously Coach Fangio is a great defensive coach, but, you know, obviously Coach Hackett has a good experience in the offensive game, so it's going to be good.
You know, we speak for all fantasy managers, so I'll just go ahead and ask you on behalf of all fantasy managers, we want to know how the Broncos can get you even more involved as a pass catcher in that in that Denver offense.
Yes, and trust me, I know it's frustrating. I know it is. It's frustrating for me sometimes also, but, you know, I think it's just I think the change and the different mindset coming in is going to help a ton. I think I'm excited for Coach Hackett. I'm excited for Coach Alden, the OC, and I think it's going to be good. I think the biggest thing is just, you know, making sure we're keeping everybody involved on a consistent basis, which I think they're going to do, and I think that's going to help in the fantasy world also.
You know, this past season you were targeted on 21% of your pass routes.
Mm-hmm.
You need to tell your coaches, get that up to 24-25% next year.
Yes, definitely.
We'd love to see that.
Definitely.
I mean, this is like a kind of like a cliche question, but like, how do you manage that when you're in an offense with so many just really, really good young offensive players? Like, how how do you keep everyone happy? And like, how does, like, because we haven't really heard, I mean, you know, we don't know, we're not in the locker room, we haven't heard like ever like the Broncos, like a young group where people are like fighting about who's getting the ball. And this, how do you kind of like maintain harmony when there's so many guys who just deserve to get the ball?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely something to navigate that a lot of teams don't have to. Like you said, we have a lot of young guys. We have a lot of players and a lot of guys that can really do some really good things. So it's just a matter of everybody continuously being happy for everybody's success. And we're a pretty tight-knit group, so everybody is usually pretty happy about everybody's success. And like I said, I think with this new coaching staff, they're gonna do a great job of making sure that everybody on a consistent basis is getting those opportunities.
See, we're talking about getting you opportunities. So you're part of this young wave of tight ends where, like, basically you're too big for cornerbacks, you're too fast for linebackers, you're just like a walking mismatches. Like, how have you seen this? How is this, like, changing offensive approaches? And do you see this becoming an even bigger part of NFL offenses? Like, people looking for Noah Fant, just, like, huge mismatches on the seam.
No, I definitely think that it's becoming a part of the game, right? I mean, I've talked with, you know, our coaches, our GM, is like, if you have a good tight end, if you have a tight end that's a weapon in the pass game and that can do good things in the run game, you're going to give yourself a better opportunity to win games. So it's becoming a part of our game, a very focal part of our game in today's game, to have that tight end and have that position on point. So I think even in the last couple drafts, everybody's been trying to get their guy at tight end, and I think it's great.
It's amazing. Every year, and just and like, we want it, you're gonna have a 1,000-yard season. It's coming.
It's coming. It's got to.
And you guys had two good tight ends. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, really, really great.
I want Albert O. Mizzou. That guy is a baller.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a baller too. Noah, you're here at the Super Bowl. you don't have to, if you don't want to give us a game prediction, who is going to win the Super Bowl? And this kind of like, what are like the personal storylines you're interested in? Like, what are you kind of like personally rooting for in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally rooting for, I got a couple teammates, former teammates on the Rams, obviously Von Miller, Justin Hollins, Alaric Jackson that I was actually college roommates with. They both went to Iowa, so I'm rooting for those guys. I think it's going to be a close game, though. It's hard to say. I think the biggest tell of the game is going to be if the Bengals can protect Joe Burrow. If they can, I think they have a really good chance to win. If that front line of the Rams gets to him, Aaron Donald, then
tell your former teammate to take it.
Yeah, if they get to him a lot, then I don't know how it's gonna go.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, Vaughn, don't hurt him.
Yeah,
just take it a little easy. And last question, Noah, what do you want to say about Outkast NFT?
Yeah, so this is, I mean, Outkast is a great company, right? Outkast NFT. They got over 10,000 anime-based NFTs out there. It's a great company. They have more. They're releasing more NFTs coming up soon in a couple weeks. And they're great, man. I it's a new wave of what's coming. They're starting to dabble into the metaverse stuff. I'm hyped. I'm super hyped about the Andromeda metaverse. It's kind of, I don't know if you guys know, but it's kind of like a, if you put an Oculus on, right, and you can see all around you and you can see all these things, different things around you, and you can buy certain things. It's really cool, man. And I'm hyped about it. I'm fully behind them, and I think it's going to be a great partnership. So
that's great.
We want NFTs of you scoring touchdowns next year.
Yes, please.
We're going to get
buy those.
We're going to collect all of those.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Noah, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck in 2022. And, yeah, just here's for a good game this Sunday.
Yeah. Thanks, Noah.
It'll be great. Thank you, guys.
Denny, Noah was a very, very, just a good interview, really good football player. We forgot to ask about, unfortunate that he might be arguably too good of a football player. Why is he good at blocking?
Yeah.
Why is that something he pursues?
I was actually going to ask him to please focus on not learning how to block, on spending the offseason forgetting everything he knows on how to block so that the coaching staff will, with frustration, say, fine, you're just a pass catching option. Get out there, run your routes. We're going to target you over the middle, and unfortunately I forgot to ask.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about how do we spread these targets around in the super crowded, super talented young offense. And have you ever considered just being less good at blocking? So they have no choice but to just throw to you constantly.
The best way to be a good tight end is to only do the one thing good. and for fantasy purposes, we want that to be pass catching.
Yeah, but Noah is a great guy. He really is still ascending in fantasy.
He
too.
Is.
And he's going to have a monster campaign at some point.
I mean, everything in his history, both in college and athletically and everything, points to him being Mark Andrews. He could easily post a Mark Andrews season at some point.
Yeah, it's been nothing. The fact that he hasn't gone off for, 800, 900 seasons, nothing to do with him. And just the way the team is built, the way the offense is built. But Denny, I'm from St. Louis.
You are.
We're known for our thin crust pizza that is very, very, very divisive. We're talking very divisive. But it's not nearly as divisive as Cincinnati's signature food, Skyline Chili, of which there's been some new developments today. There have been some Skyline Chili developments today. It's been the talk of the world. Bengals tight end C.J. Uzomah, which everyone knows is your favorite player, has said that he will take a bath in Skyline Chili if Cincinnati wins the Super Bowl.
Has there ever
been a more obvious adjust down in the ranks than this?
Adjust down. We have to. And this breaks my heart to adjust down. But if he said that, he's really going to have to do it. We're going to see a picture on our Twitter timeline one day of C.J. Uzomah in a bathtub full of Skyline Chili.
You see this picture on the screen here today. It's the Skyline Chili cocktail.
Come on.
Yeah, the Cincy Teeny is what it's
called.
Frankly, I can't even really look at this. we need to get this off the screen.
The Cincy Teeny, this is an abomination. Honestly, it's an insult to the entire great city of Cincinnati.
Can you think of anything? I don't know if there's anything I'd want to consume less before getting on a plane than a cocktail made of Skyline Chili. I mean, even if it's like a really short, like connecting flight.
Yeah.
Like putting a Skyline Chili cocktail into my, I'm just going to go up 35,000 feet. This seems like a really responsible thing to put in my system right now.
Yeah, shout out to my fellow passengers is what I would say.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing, people get on the plane sometimes, like, I've seen people get on the plane with, like, an entire pizza. And, you know, like, makes the entire plane smell like pizza.
Oh.
Like, someone just gets on the plane with, like, an entire steak dinner or something. Like, just imagine getting on with any kind of Skyline chili product, like, what that might do to the cabin.
So these people have not heard that pizza is bad.
What
is that?
Well, is this a Denny take?
Pizza's not
what?
Mostly pizza's not good. I mean, I guess there are some versions that are okay, but there's often too much sauce, way too much cheese.
Well, first off,
it would be better without cheese.
The single worst take you have is that cheese isn't good. So I guess I should have known.
Right.
You're honestly a pizza truther. I'm not even kidding. I didn't even know this. You're actually a pizza truther.
Yeah. No. I like my pizza with extremely small amounts of cheese. And, you know, because, like you said, I've, you know, long been a hater of cheese, so it makes sense.
This is, anyway, so,
I'm fired.
It's shocking you still have your job, by the way, but you are more fired than ever.
Oh, wow.
The NBC lawyer is funny, doesn't like this. Like, they are writing this down right now. They're actually out here.
Hey,
a lot of people, you probably haven't known, there's so many people, you don't know who some of these people are. Some of them are the lawyers.
There are more NBC lawyers here than there are anybody else in Media Row.
There's a lot of production staff, there's some talent, but it is actually mostly lawyers.
And they just look at me the whole time.
They've been, we can't find the silver bullet, though. We've been trying to construct the case all year, and we just cannot find the silver bullet.
Shout out to the labor laws.
We cannot find the silver bullet to terminate Denny's employment with the National Broadcasting Corporation. Denny, we had a lot of really good guests on today. Robert Mays was fantastic. Jay Croucher was fantastic. Noah Fant was fantastic. I've been checking in on your new thoughts every day on the Super Bowl. Daryl Henderson looks like he's going to play. It looks like they could even be like a rotation at running back for the Rams. Mm-hmm. CJ Uzama, Tyler Higbee are both trending in the right direction. What are your new thoughts today on Super Bowl 56 on Sunday?
All right. A new thought, and this entered and it kind of burrowed in my brain. And that, you know, no pun intended with the burrow thing, but it's this. It's what Jay was saying about Matthew Stafford being so volatile and having that grenade. And if he goes full Stafford, which you should never go full,
never
Stafford,
go full Stafford,
and he throws three interceptions, say, in this game, and maybe two early picks, the Bengals win. And they win maybe going away from the Rams, because the Rams will not be able to do anything they want to do after that. Now, they do have the firepower to make a comeback with Beckham and with Cooper Kupp and Stafford, you know, when he's, you know, playing well. But there is the potential for a complete meltdown. And that's what Sean McVay has been trying to avoid for 2 months now by establishing the run and being conservative.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should have been paying, maybe like Sean McVay is telling us something.
Right.
Like where he's like in much greater fear of that than we realize. Because, yeah, that's the way, I mean, they are now a run first offense, essentially.
Like everything that we've said, everything that our guests have said, everything that everybody here in Media Row has said all week, it all goes right out the window if Stafford comes out and throws an early pick. That is a major, major swing, and one that puts the Bengals at a great advantage.
Jay had that crazy stat that I cannot believe, where like one interception is worth like a 5-point swing. That's like
huge.
And like, so it, like, there's nothing scientific here, but like, it is funny that history is repeating itself from the AFC Championship game, where like all the talk leading up, no one even really entertained. Like, we didn't even talk about, like, what kind of game would have to emerge for the Bengals to win, because we just didn't even really entertain. And, like, no, this is, like, a day four of the podcast, and really no one who's appeared on the show, including us, have, like, even, like, explored the case for how the Bengals
win.
You
know, the Bengals, like the 49ers, who had a lot of success against the Rams this season and almost pulled it out, you know, in the NFC title game, the Bengals play a similar type of defense. They drop against Stafford, I should say. Drop so many people back. They rush as few as possible. They know how Stafford fails. And, you know, other teams like the Bucks, for instance, didn't watch enough tape. I don't know. Didn't study the analytics. Like, they didn't look into it, and they got burned big time by Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp. But I think the Bengals present a significant problem, potentially.
But the Rams are just going to win, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Denny, we're almost out of time today, but The Twitter, as we call it.
That's what the young people call it.
Remains a flutter in talk that, I mean, just no one, they just refuse to believe, that, especially, you know, with the lawyer situation, that the NBC would send you to Los Angeles. There's kind of nothing we can do to prove these people that were here. Because, I mean, frankly, I've been telling them you're not here, too, because you're not.
Right. I wish I appreciate it, by the way.
to the people on Twitter and to your co-host that you are. You, first off, I mean, is this like a hologram situation? Like, what is this, CGI, deepfake hologram? Like, is it actually? Like, is this just like Warren Sharp sitting here right, and they've like put his face and there's like Warren, no, you mustache. Can just eat lunch or something. Yeah. We can superimpose Denny over you. While
right.
You're on. What no, is going on?
Here are some thoughts on how I can prove it. One is I could get the production staff to sign an affidavit saying that I am here.
They you know, can't so, lie. They're so, these are honest people. These are so, good hardworking
so it could,
people.
It could be they are hardworking and I think that they will be honest and say that I am here. Also, I could pay for plane tickets to fly people from across the country to my house in the great state of Maryland to look in every corner of my house to make sure I'm not there. I can't think of anything else at this point.
Well, then, how do we know you're just like in the yard? You haven't, like,
they could look in the yard.
Dug, like, a really cool ditch or something.
We have a very weird old playhouse in the back that's been there since, like, 1988. They can look in that. I'm not in there.
I think we actually do. Maybe NBC is going to begin paying for people. Flying out, like, a number of people. It's kind of like a UN-type thing. You know, they send, like, a peacekeeping
a convoy. Yeah.
Yeah, like, kind of like, you know, like, in a real, like, elite inspections unit. So, but what does that even prove? You're not in Maryland. You know, you tweeted, basically, it seemed like you were at the Dallas airport. You tweeted the thing of the Cowboys doll.
I can only be in two places, Maryland or L.A. This is physics.
No, one of them is not L.A. No, you've been here pumping out great content all week.
Thank you.
And it's hard to believe it's already been day four. We only have one day left in Los Angeles. This is going to be another really great show. We have Danny Kelly from The Ringer joining us. We're going to have Clyde Edwards-Helaire from the Kansas City Chiefs joining us. Yeah. So just a really, really great week of shows. A really, really great show today. Thanks again so much to Robert Mays, Jay Croucher, and Noah Fant. And just thank you so much, though, most of all to you for listening. We hope you've been enjoying us all week. For Denny, I'm Pat. We'll be back with you one more day from Radio Row in Los Angeles tomorrow.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.